By the Neo-Assyrian period, the provincial administration was in the hands of governors appointed by the king. One of the distinctive features of Assyrian administration is that the titles for most officials had their origin in military positions, even if they were in what we would consider civilian offices. The imperial bureaucracy becomes larger, and positions were granted by the king as a reward for loyalty to him. What sort of leader was necessary for this empire? Assyrian kings were described as being chosen by the god Ashur and connected closely to him. Many of their names, as we've seen, included Ashur as part of them. The god Ashur wanted kings to expand his territory, and this idea is included in a surviving coronation hymn. So it legitimizes the spread of Assyria, and it also requires the king to fight, so he always has a justification for his battles and his campaigns. The texts describe annual campaigns led by the king, and this embellishes the situation. Not every king fought every year, although they would have been personally involved. Even if they did not lead the army out, they would have been central players in the strategy, and the generals who conducted the war on behalf of the king would certainly have to answer to him personally for their actions on the campaign. Assyrian kings were not described as gods, although they were understood to be the mortals closest to the gods. Access to the king was relatively limited, especially in comparison to rulers such as Hammurabi, who had been so closely involved in their subjects' judicial affairs, for example. Remember, Hammurabi came across as sort of a micromanager. He was involved in a lot of petty disputes. There was also less public interest in the king's involvement in justice. As the representative of Ashur, of course he made sure that there was justice in the land, but again, we don't see the king settling legal affairs as previous rulers had. Assyrian subjects still benefited, however, from kingship. When the throne was securely led by a king chosen by Ashur, one letter to the king notes, "Old men dance, the young men sing, women and girls are happy, those who were sick have got well, the hungry have been sated, the needy have been covered with clothes." So even though our official texts don't focus as much on the benefits that a king might bring to his subjects, they are still benefiting by having this divinely chosen ruler on the throne. The Assyrians linked temples and palaces in a single complex for the first time, and this helped to create a seamless union of the ruler and the gods. And it would also reinforce the connection between the king and Ashur. This aspect of city planning was adopted by later cultures as a very effective way of joining the two controlling powers in one location. Since the kings always represented themselves as ensuring order and prosperity on behalf of the gods, this would create a complex of rulers who cared for their kingdom in one place. We've discussed specific scenes of the sculpted reliefs that decorated Assyrian palaces, but now let's consider the type as a whole. The long panels of gypsum, a soft, light-colored stone, lined the walls of the public areas of palaces at Nimrud, Nineveh, and Dur-Sharrukin. Royal activities, mostly fighting, hunting, religious rituals, are the subjects that are depicted most often in these reliefs. The scenes stretch over long strips, and it shows a progression of time. They're carved in low relief, so the background is cut away from the figures. And the composition of these scenes combines both action scenes that have a lot of movement, horses drawing chariots at full gallop over dead enemies, with very static scenes, such as lines of deportees moving very peacefully and calmly to their new location.